This is Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR. This program content is made possible in part by WKAR listeners.
Hey, good afternoon. Welcome to Sports Talk 870. I'm your host, Earl Robinson, and I'll be with you until 2 o'clock discussing sports with you. So just give us a call at 355-9527 or toll free 877-952-7870. Our email address is sportstalk@wkar.org. We're going to start out today talking with Fox Sports reporter Rico Beard, talk about a little bit about the Tigers, and we'll also discuss the NBA playoffs and a few other things right here on AM 870 WKAR. Let's bring in our good friend Rico Beard. Rico, how you doing, buddy?
What's going on, Earl? I'm doing I'm doing fine, my man. How are you?
Hey, doing good. Okay, nice, lovely day. We've had some nice weather. The weather's turning. Maybe the Tigers can start winning. I mean, boy, they had an up and down first quarter. Just win one, lose one, win one, lose one, win two, lose two. It's been a strange first 25% of their season's completed now, but it's been a strange season so far.
Yeah, not quite the season that many people thought. I'm thinking that a lot of the World Series celebration talk will be put on ice, as now we see that money cannot buy you a championship. I think the Yankees have proved that it can help you get one, but it doesn't guarantee it. And with all the big free agent signings, with Prince Fielder and all, this team is showing that it has a lot of deficiencies, And the fact that the Baltimore Orioles got one of the best records should show you that. You just can't buy a World Series championship.
That's for sure, because Baltimore, at the beginning of the year, I think everyone thought that Baltimore was going to be was going to finish last in their division, and now they're sitting in the cat's bird seat, the best in their division. So that's another thing that makes it a strange year.
Everybody was buying Baltimore condolences cards, saying, hey, you're in the worst division in baseball. You got the Yankees, the Red Sox, and the Rays. We sorry, but somebody's got to finish fourth, and everybody's looking up at them. So, hey, the Tigers, they got a ways to go. I mean, fortunately, they do have Justin Verlander. I was there for the almost no-hitter game. I mean, the crowd was electric. I got to the game late and didn't realize exactly what was going on because I was waiting on somebody. And by the time we got there, we looked up Kelly had made the catch in center field around the fourth, fifth inning. And I'm like, why is everybody getting so excited about this catch? And I looked at the scoreboard and tapped my buddy and was like, yeah, check out the scoreboard. That's why. Like, he's working on something special here. And took it all the way to the ninth inning. Everybody's standing up. Unfortunately, Pittsburgh got the one hit, so he ended up with a one-hitter, but right now, he is probably the only consistent bright spot on this team. Fielder started to heat up over this past weekend, but, the biggest problem is just second base. I mean, I really think that, in my opinion, they need to see whatever they can do and try and bring back Profito Polanco. I know it may sound a little far-fetched, but he can give you the defense at second base, plus he can be that consistent number two hitter that I think this team desperately needs. After that, you've got to go get some bullpen help.
Yes, and that's the thing. We thought that Brandon Nimmo so bad. Brandon Nimmo, at least he's hitting 200 since he went to Oakland. And, of course, he's still batting under 200 when you look at his whole season stats. But at least his batting average has improved a little bit. And,
when it comes to Brandon Nimmo, he does this every year. He'll get hot for a couple of weeks, and everybody thinks he's the greatest. At the end of the season, he'll still be batting around 220. So, yeah, he's doing fine now for the A's. God bless him. You know what? Let him stay out in Oakland. I think that he was just becoming a distraction here in Detroit because he was just a little too polarized.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, so many people, I mean, I know he was well-liked, but then again, a lot of people, as you know, other side of the fence, a lot of people didn't like him because he just couldn't hit. He couldn't produce, and that's the thing. In this game, you got to produce, and that's the thing. Every time someone doesn't produce, they want to get rid of him.
Yeah, but, I mean, love him or hate him, there was no middle ground. Either you absolutely was a Brandon Nimmo fan, or you couldn't wait for him to get out of town. And I think that you know, he just didn't come through. I mean, he made the comment in Oakland saying, oh, well, you know, I'm hitting a lot of RBIs because this team has put me in position, whereas when he was with the Tigers, you know, he was, I think last year he was 10 for 73 with runners in scoring position. So he didn't, he just didn't produce here. And, you know, good riddance, God bless him, but I think that they'll be fine without him. Their biggest thing right now, they may, the Tigers may be able to get by at, you know, with utility at second base, but the bullpen is really letting them down. I mean, the fact that, you know, Scherzer yesterday, he's somewhat of an enigma, but you just don't trust any type of lead or tie game to the bullpen anymore.
No, you can't. You really can't.
If your starting pitchers are doing well, you might as well just let them try and finish out the game.
Yeah, I don't know if Leland would do that. You know, Leland's got his, you know, so many detractors against him that want him out of town. And I've never seen it work when they fire a guy in the middle of the season. But and I don't think he's going to get fired anyway. But, boy, the fans would want him fired yesterday.
I think Leland has, with the talent that they have around him, plus what's going on in the last few years, you don't want to say he's lost the team. But I think that, barring a major, you know, injury, if they don't make it to the World Series, I just don't think that his job is safe because you gave him everything that he could, any manager could possibly ask for. Now it's up to him to manage and show that you know what you're doing. I think that it's getting to the point, as Chuck Daly used to say all the time, after a while, the team stops listening to what you have to say.
Right.
They kind of tune you out, and I think that he's reaching that point where this team is starting to tune him out.
Man, and that's unfortunate for the Tigers because, like you say, this is a year that they – everyone expect him to get to the World Series. Now, with Fielder, you know, Fielder and actually Pujols, it's always difficult when you change leagues, and we're seeing that with those two for sure. It's just difficult when you change leagues, have to learn all the new pitchers in the new league. How do you think that's going, basically, with Fielder and Pujols? And I'm assuming they're going to snap out of it one day, or they both will, but right now, boy, I know the teams feel they're not getting their money's worth.
No, and normally when you switch leagues, one of two things happen. Unfortunately, with those two, they're struggling.
Mm-hmm.
Either you struggle or you just start off red hot because the pitchers don't know you and they make a mistake and, you know, throw you some softball pitches. But I think in the end, kind of like with Brandon Inge, Water's going to find its level. Pujols and Fielder will get back to what they used to be. And I don't think that the American League pitching will stifle them that much that once they hit their stride, I think they'll be back. And Fielder's starting to show that, you know what, it may be a little bit about the money. They may be feeling a little extra pressure to show that they're worth all the money that these teams put into them. But I think come July and August that those two, they're professional. They're going to settle down, and they'll be back to hitting the way that we expect them to hit.
Okay. Well, let's turn our attention. I know we both watch the NBA somewhat. It should be an intriguing game tonight between Oklahoma City and the Lakers. Do you think the Lakers can win this series, or do you still think that Oklahoma is the better team?
I think that I honestly was one of the few people who thought that Oklahoma was just one of the better teams between these two. And it's starting to show, and the Lakers, man, you can't even say it's chinks in the armor. This armor is almost rusted and getting ready to fall apart. I think that this may be the last go-round for them. I think that, and if they somehow survive this game, then I don't think that they're winning the series. You're going to see some overhaul going on with L.A. They got to then decide, do we get rid of everybody and keep Kobe, or do we just blow this thing up and send Kobe off and try and bring in as many young people and draft picks as possible? I just don't see the Lakers being a threat anymore. They're almost like a paper champion, you know. They kind of remind me of like Mike Tyson or Tiger Woods, where you used to see them in serum. Mm-hmm. Now it's just like, yeah, we can beat you. Everybody else beats you.
Yep, that is true. When we look at the on the other side, I mean, we're seeing San Antonio's good, but Indiana in Miami. Can you see Indiana? I was thinking Indiana was going to run away with the series, but now that Miami's tied it up, do you think Miami that maybe LeBron can get to another championship series?
I think that what we'll end up seeing, I'm still shocked that Indiana is really putting up a fight like this. I think in the end, Miami will win in game seven. I think that it's going to go all the way to seven. I never thought that Roy Hibbert would be that valuable of a player. You couldn't have told me that he was that instrumental for Indiana. But I think it'll end up going seven. I think Miami will kind of get its act together and somehow find a way to make it. Now, if Indiana pulls it off, I think I'll be mildly shocked, but not, like, totally shocked.
Eventually, can they win it all? Do they have the stuff? I mean, when Chris Bosh went out, that certainly changed the dynamics of that team. And Roy Hibbert, now he's playing like he's a king and a monster, even though we know he's not.
I was like, when did Will Chamberlain join the league again? when Bill Russell, Roy Hibbert. Wow, I never thought I would say those three names in the same sentence.
No, we didn't think that Roy Hibbert would ever even be a serviceable center, but he's right now in this playoff system. I don't know. I'm thinking of Indiana. Their leading scorer is coming off the bench, and that tells you how good of a team they are. They've got just a good, solid rotation. And you're right. I'm pretty sure. I've always thought the Miami could win it, but boy, without Chris Bosh there, that started to change my thinking somewhat.
Yeah, but talent normally wins out in the end. Yep. Man, Hibbert is really doing well to aid in that whole Georgetown Center legacy, but I think in the end, talent always wins out. And I just think Miami has too much talent.
Yeah, they do. Well, the team that definitely has too much, and I think I'd have to say he's the best coach in the league, is Greg Popovich. I mean, he's really got San Antonio going. The three old guys up there with Ginobili and Parker and Stunken, they're still holding their own, and they're doing well. I mean, they haven't lost in so long. Do you see them winning the whole thing, or will the Young Lions get them? But then the other side, San Antonio's old. It's 26, almost 27 years old, average in age. The three old guys and everybody else is pretty young, and they've been playing pretty well.
I think San Antonio will. I think they will beat the Thunder just for the fact that they've been there before. They'll be able to handle the pressure. It's kind of funny in me in this day and age, with LeBron and Wade and Kobe, and just hearing about all of these different people. San Antonio doesn't have the flashy players.
Nope.
They just keep winning. Yep. They're consistent. They're always there. They may not win it every year, but they're always going to be a force. They play great together, fundamental basketball, share the ball, and it just goes to show you that type of team play still could win in this individualized game called the NBA.
It does. It really is. It's really changed a lot. Boy, even since we've been watching it, this game, I don't know when the last time you could say maybe it was the Magic and Bird eras and some of Jordan eras when we saw really team play, but we just
I still think it's the 2004 Pistons.
Yeah.
That Pistons team was the last, other than the Spurs, was the last team that just went out there and won, minus the superstar, just played together as a team.
Yep. Oh, that's true. Hey, Rico, I want to thank you for being with me today. It's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. And I'm going to talk with our other good friend coming up. I'm going to talk with Jim Comperoni, talk a little bit of Spartan football. So I know.
Oh, no, I was about to say, wow, you're not asking me anything about Michigan State, but you're going to talk to Cop. Okay.
Yep.
I'll concede the Cop.
Okay. We'll talk to you later, Rico.
Thanks a lot, man.
Hey, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. And that's Rico Beard talking sports with us right here on AM 870 WKAR, 20 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break on AM 870 WKAR.
There's talk And then there's talk that matters. Tune into Talk of the Nation and hear experienced voices, informed views, and smart calls. We'll tackle the day's top stories and discuss the most interesting topics, the issues that affect you. I'm Neil Conan. Join us for the next Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 2 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
Mostly cloudy skies today with a chance of showers this afternoon, a high in the low 70s. Becoming partly cloudy tonight with a low in the mid-40s. Then for Tuesday, mostly sunny, a high around 70. Sunny again on Wednesday and warmer, a high in the upper 70s. I'm Kevin Lavery.
And give us a call. Our lines are open, 355-9527. Toll free, 877-9527-870. Our email address, sportstalk@wkar.org. Well, let's turn our attention to talk a little bit of Spartan football during the summer with our good friend Jim Comperoni. Jim, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, really good. Thanks for calling. I would have liked to listen to the earlier segment
with Rico.
My friend Rico Beard. He's always a lot of fun.
He is. Yeah, because we were talking about the NBA playoffs and the Tigers, and I know you follow the Tigers too a little bit, and I know we want to talk a little bit more about the MSU football. I know it's the quiet era right now. I know the recruiting's going. How has recruiting been thus far?
You know, the interesting thing about Michigan State recruiting right now and for the last two or three years is that they've not had a lot of scholarship slots. You know, obviously they've done well on the field. They've won 11 games the last couple of years. And part of that is, you know, they've recruited well previously. They've done a good job evaluating. They've done a good job developing players. And a couple of good recruiting wins thrown in. And I think you would agree also it's a pretty good, productive family atmosphere at the program. You know, D'Antonio gets results, but he does it in a friendly, caring way. And they don't lose many players, Earl. They don't have many guys that turn out to not be very good. They don't have many guys that don't work. And they don't have many guys that quit and leave. Even though, I mean, it's getting to the point now where you've got juniors and seniors that are falling to the third and fourth string because, you know, they continue to recruit pretty well. But those guys are not leaving. I mean, Jeremy Gaynor, John Dale, you know, these guys are falling to third, fourth string, but they stick with the program. They like playing at Michigan State. And when you have that many guys on scholarship, you don't have much room to sign the next year. So it's a good thing that you're winning, and sometimes it's a good thing when you don't have a lot of scholarship room.
Right.
Actually, you know, for years, Penn State was kind of like that for a long time. But so Michigan State, you know, they might have room for 18 to 20 again this year. And, you know, they're off to a solid start with about seven. They've got a quarterback already, as you know, Damian Terry out of Erie, Pennsylvania. The difference there is that usually Michigan State gets a quarterback after football camp in the summer, and they usually decide who they really want to go after, you know, June, July after the camps, and maybe they'll sign a guy in August. You know, that's the way it was with Hoyer. Smoker, I guess, was a little bit that way, although he didn't come to camp. Everybody knew they loved him. Everybody liked him. Terry is a situation where, you know, you had to offer a little bit earlier because recruiting is really sped up. You can't necessarily wait and get three or four quarterbacks in camp and then decide because quarterbacks are already making their mind up. So they went out and watched him at the beginning of May workouts out at his high school, and he certainly passed all the tests that they watched during some spring workouts. They liked him on film. They went ahead and offered and got him. So that's one of the changes, that they've already got a quarterback. You know, he's pretty good. You know, it's not like Alabama, USC, and Florida was after him, but they weren't after Kirk Cousins either. So this guy's got an arm. He's a little bit more mobile than other ones they've signed. At 6'4", he's tall and he's mobile and runs a spread zone read in high school, but he's got the tools to be a pocket quarterback, and they'll want him to be a pocket quarterback at Michigan State. But he's got a little more mobility than they've had.
And that's good because you definitely need a mobile quarterback these days. I mean, it's hard to imagine that so many quarterbacks have teams that have quarterbacks that just stand back there in the pocket looking for a receiver. You just about have to have some good mobility today, don't you, Comp?
It seems like it, unless you're just great. It's hard to find great. You know, Cousins kind of was that way. You know, he didn't run around a whole lot, and he got the job done. You know, Connor Cook, the guy we just saw in the green-white game, he can run around. He's got some strength.
Yeah.
You know, not great speed, but good speed. As a scrambler, maybe more like a Drew Stanton, although Stanton had great knack to make people miss. I don't know if Cook has that, but Cook is, you know, just as quick as Stanton and just as strong. You know, Stanton was pretty strong also. So, and Connor Cook, if he wins the job in a couple of years, you'll see a little bit more mobility. I think you're going to see more mobility out of Maxwell. He can run a lot better than Cousins did. Cousins can run a little bit, but Maxwell can run pretty good. And, you know, Cook played pretty well in the green-white game, I thought. Really well for a guy that's still a true freshman and is still just learning the offense and had to play for both teams and was working behind mix-and-match offensive linemen. You know, the green team had three offensive line starters. The white team had two. And anytime you break up the offensive line, you're going to get, you know, you're going to have some problems with cohesion and communication. Meanwhile, on defense, you could mix and match starters, and all those guys know all of the blitz packages, and they were bringing blitz packages. So Cook had to work behind mix and max offensive line against excellent blitzes, excellent defense, and he didn't make any big mistakes. He had some passes batted at the line of scrimmage, but kind of fixed that about halfway through the game. And I thought Connor Cook, for dropping back 45 times, that's 45 chances to fail. And he didn't make any major mistakes. And he made about 7 or 8 excellent passes. Now, the point I was going to get to is that Cook is a guy that can run. But in the green-white game, you can't really tuck it and run because right. on one hand, it's a benefit for him that you're not allowed to sack him, which was nice. But on the other hand, you were also taking away one of his tools, which is to tuck it and run it. So we didn't see that part of Connor Cook. And I don't know if he will be the starter in a few years. He'll be a guy that'll compete. But he's a guy that brings a little bit of talent to the talent pool. And in a couple of years, Damian Terry will be in that talent pool as well, along with Tyler O'Connor, who is graduating from high school in Ohio right now and played real well in the North-South All-Star game in Ohio.
Well, Tim wanted me to ask you a question. He wanted to know, have you watched all the spring game yet? Or are you still watching film of the spring game?
Yeah, I watched it. And we've got an issue with the magazine coming out this Thursday. So I kind of went back in and watched a couple other things again. But, yeah, went over it pretty thoroughly. You know, every play, you look to see if there's a bubble in the line either way and who caused it and rewind it again, rewind it again, rewind it again, and trying to, you know, get to the bottom of who did well on a particular play and who didn't. Sometimes there's nothing in any of the plays. But if there's nothing, it probably means the defensive tackle played the point of attack real well, you know. I was impressed with James Kittredge, the defensive tackle. He's one of the candidates to take over at the three technique. You know, they moved Tyler Hoover inside to play some three. And I think Kittredge is kind of nosed ahead of him in the spring, just a sophomore transfer from Vanderbilt. And Hoover's been a pretty good defensive end over the years, missed last year with an injury. Kittredge is good. I'm not saying he's going to be Jarrell Worthy, obviously, but I think he can beat Kevin Pickelman. You know, he's a little different. He's not as tall as Pickelman, maybe not as fast, but maybe a little more sturdy inside and good hands for a sophomore. Kittredge is going to be okay, and that's one of the things that came away with him from the green-white game that makes me think, yeah, this defense is ready to keep on plugging away and being a good defense. That was a question mark there at defensive tackle. They've got a lot of good young candidates, good ones, like Brandon Clemens and the Knox kid out of Muskegon, but they kind of need somebody that's not a young kid right now. And I think Kittredge, I think he's going to end up beating out Hoover, and that's a good sign.
Okay. Got Dave from Kalamazoo. Dave, how you doing?
Yeah, good. Three quick things, Cobb. One, wasn't it a while back, I remember Penn State went through a period where they got all kinds of guys committing very early and, you know, 2-3 years down the line found out they had plenty of nothing?
And absolutely. Penn State's one of the schools that really changed the trend of getting early commitments, getting right. juniors in the month of, you know, February and March and April and May. And, yeah, they would, you know, come out with, you know, almost a full class of 15 to 20 early. And it didn't work out, and they kind of shied away from that a little bit. And then lately, Texas has run into that. Texas, you know, they're a program that can kind of take their pick in state and in border states. They just line them up in a big circle, and it's like duck, duck, goose. They go around and pet them on the head, and they like the ones they like. They say Longhorn, 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 and they take the ones they want, which is cute that you can do it. But the earlier you do it, theoretically, the more of a chance you might make an evaluation error or a personality error. And you look at Texas the last couple of years, and they have fallen off in terms of wins and losses.
Well, exactly. I mean, so you see some of these other schools, you know, call it cradle robbing right now, and I wonder, you know, truth, they can talk about all class ratings what you want, but I think every time, and when these guys are juniors, when you start taking score. Two other quick things. One is Michigan State running into its own street cred or what other people think, and is in, holy cow, Michigan State's offering this guy. Texas being a prime example. I can't remember his name, starts with a B. You know, and suddenly a whole bunch of folks in his neighborhood in Texas have expressed a lot more interest as Michigan State.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask you about that offensive lineman.
Yeah, Caleb Bedenach.
Yep.
Guy out of Texas. And, you know, when Michigan State offered him, he didn't have many offers, wasn't really ranked. 6'5", 320 from Katy, Texas. And, you know, committed back in March. You know, Michigan State, meanwhile, was looking at other offensive linemen. And, you know, a couple of in-state guys that were, you know, pretty good players, but Michigan State held off on offering. They just weren't quite sure. Maybe wanted to get those guys in camp. But they go down and look at Caleb Bedenach. They look at his film. They're like, hey, you know, this guy's good enough to offer right now. And Michigan State offered. And he and his father liked the pitch. His father is a minister who spends a lot of time in Africa, actually. And Bedenach spends a lot of time in Africa in the summer. And that's, he's a well-rounded guy that way, but in Texas, you know, he would come back to Texas and not be in great shape, and he would miss a week or two of two-a-days, okay? And by the time he would get
does the coach have to suddenly, you know, as compared to some other schools, I mean, he's pitching kids to redshirt, essentially. So how, you know, since you've been covering these guys for a long time and
okay, you broke up there on that last question.
I know where he was going with that. Let me finish my point with Bedenach. So, a lot, you know, as a sophomore and a junior, he might not get in real great shape till the end of September. You know, so in a lot of ways, he was a diamond in the rough sleeper, but he was still good enough for them to offer right away. Now, you know, he's coming out of spring, and he's supposed to stay in Texas all summer, and no one really knows how good he's going to look, but he looks plenty good right now. But getting to his point, Michigan State goes down there and offers. 10 years ago, that might not have caught any notice.
Right.
Now they offer, and you're seeing, you know, that Northwestern jumped in with an offer, then Arizona State, then Baylor, then Arkansas, then Auburn, then Mississippi and Kansas State and Oklahoma State and Texas A&M. All of a sudden, they're offering this guy. Would all of that attention come Caleb Bedenach's way if this were the John L. Smith Spartans? That's a great question. I don't know. Maybe Michigan State's offer made other people take a look at him and say, hey, I can see what Michigan State likes about this guy. But I do think that Michigan State is getting that kind of reputation with other coaching staffs around the country. When Michigan State offered Denzel Drone a couple of years ago, they wanted to keep it a secret. The guys in Florida, they wanted to keep it a secret. They didn't want this to happen, other schools coming in and taking notice. You know, Michigan State's going to have to win for a few more years to really get that kind of cachet, especially with the people that recruit, that rank recruits, you know, the recruiting analysts and so forth. But I do think that was part of what happened with Bedenach. It's Michigan State. They've been 11-2. They came in and offered. And then these other schools that are closer to home, like Arkansas and Texas A&M, you know, hey, man, this guy's in our backyard a little bit. You know, why should this guy fly over our school to go way up to Michigan State? So I think Michigan State, in the end, might have a tough time hanging on to him because he's going to have a chance to stay closer to home. On the other side of the coin, this is the first time I can remember a guy from that far away committing to Michigan State, Earl.
Yes.
Sight unseen. He's mm-hmm. never been to East Lansing. Now, other programs have that kind of power. We've seen Michigan do that a few times. Ohio State do that a few times. I've never seen Michigan State go out and get a guy from a couple thousand miles away that's never been to East Lansing. So he likes Michigan State, likes the situation, likes the coaches. Now, Terry Samuel, lead recruiter out there, he likes him. He'll visit in the summer. And I tell you what, Earl, if you're living in Texas, the best time to come to Michigan State is in the summer.
You got that right.
I think he's gonna love what he sees when he gets here. And I think that'll help Michigan State's chances of getting him. But this one's going to go 15 rounds. I'm not sure what's going to happen.
Okay.
Now, the other question he was getting to is about how Michigan State has all this depth, has a strong two deep, and they're recruiting a lot of guys with the idea that, you know, hey, you'll get a shot, but they don't promise anything.
Right.
Last year they redshirted everybody but Tawan Jones. So the point that the caller's making is it's another different thing for Michigan State. They're coming in and recruiting, not offering immediate playing time. For the first time in years, that's the case. For the first time, really, of the 85 scholarship era, which began in about 1993, that's the case. So Michigan State's recruiting and not promising playing time. Actually, Michigan's had a lot of success promising immediate playing time here in recruiting the last couple of years. So these are different dynamics for Michigan State, and they go hand-in-hand with a couple of 11-win seasons.
Okay. We got Mark on the line. Mark, how you doing?
Good. I got a couple questions. One, Deion Sims, physically, athletically, he seems to have all the measurables. I'm wondering what might be holding him back, or maybe the representations on his athleticism may be overstated or whatever. But I'm just curious. He just seems to be a big kid that's got a lot of athletic ability, but he just doesn't put up the numbers. And then two, Arnett, I've never seen Arnett play. I'm curious as to who he might set up with in terms of makeup and style of play that maybe has come out of the Michigan State program recently, and I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, Deion Sims, last year he broke his wrist, so they had to put a cast on his hand for the last half of the season. He really couldn't catch the ball, and he was behind a couple other guys that blocked better than he did. And then he had that cast on throughout the spring, a big club which covered his fingers. And then for the spring game, the 15th practice of the spring, they reduced the cast a little bit, and his fingers were exposed, so he was able to catch the ball better. And he had a good day in the spring game. Not as good as he had last year. Remember last year in the spring game, he was big. He's one of the dominant players on the field. But he had four catches for 74 yards. Those were both team highs. And there were a couple of plays he made during a late drive to the two-yard line. With about 5 minutes to go in the game, he had a 30-yarder and then a 32-yarder. One was an out route where he got off the line, accelerated well, made an out cut, and got room against Isaiah Lewis. You know, that's 6'5", 280, going against 5'11", 190, and he made a nice cut, and the ball was on time, on target at the short side, and nice route, nice ball, decent defense, 20 yards. And then the next one was a 30-yarder, a skinny post against the blitz. It ended up looking like a skinny post into the seam in a cover three. With a cover three, there's three DBs back there, so he's going to the left seam off a skinny post move, going around the linebacker and accelerating and carrying that speed. So at 280, he's got a good first step and then a good third and fourth step athletically. And Cook with a nice pass. He made the catch there, withstood a big hit from R.J. Williamson, didn't go down, then put his helmet into, who was the other defensive back, and got another 10 yards after the catch before Darian Harris, the linebacker, came and helped him to the ground. Those two plays, he looked like an all-Big Ten type of tight end. He's got to improve his blocking, and that's one of the reasons they had him on the field this spring. They put that big club over his arm, protected it, told him not to hit anybody with it, and said, Deion, you are working on blocking this spring. And he got better at it. He needs to become real good. There's no reason why he can't be a great blocker at his size. But those two plays reminded us of what he did last spring, reminded us of what Mark was talking about with the athletic ability. He's got it. Now he's going to be the starter, and he's going to get more opportunities. And we don't know enough about Maxwell. You know, some quarterbacks have a tendency, have a penchant for looking to the tight end more. We'll see if Maxwell turns out to be that way. Connor Cook certainly was that way in the spring game. But Sims has all the horsepower. The injury held him back last year, and he's got to prove a few things as a blocker. I think he'll still be a junior this year, so he still has a lot of time. I still think he's got NFL ability, and but with graduating a couple of tight ends and not much behind him in terms of proven tight ends, they need a big year out of Deion Sims. De'Andre Arnett had a pretty good spring, but not great, Earl.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had 24 catches for Tennessee last year as a true freshman, and that's more catches than anyone else on the team has at the D1 level. Still a true freshman, still, you know, was newer to the system than anybody, so still learning the terminology and exactly what the landmarks are and the splits are for all the plays. He does have high-end cutting ability in routes in the short area, intermediate routes. I think he's a slot guy, maybe not a guy that goes outside and threatens you deep. You know, they threw one high over the middle to him in the spring game, and he didn't quite go up and get it. I have to wait and see if he can do that. Meanwhile, you've got Andre Sims Jr., a littler guy who's stockier and strong, that has shown this spring he'll go over the middle and make a tough catch. And you got a kid by the name of McGarry Kings coming in from Fort Lauderdale, who's another smallish receiver. So the first couple of years of D'Antonio era, they've not had the smaller type receivers. Now they've got two or three. They're not going to play two or three. They might play one. They're different ages of guys, so you can spread them out a little bit that way. But Arnett was good, but not great. We'll see what he looks like in the fall after he gets a better handle on the offense and he knows he's going to play. He is a worker. He is driven. He does have excellent feet in those routes in the intermediate area. And once he finds that role, I think he'll be a valuable player. I don't know if he's going to be that game-breaking all-Big Ten type of guy. Maybe he will be. But they're going to surround him with some other good big receivers on the outside, like, you know, Burbridge coming in and Monty Medeiros. And I think, you know, Benny Fowler's going to be solid. I think Lippitt's going to be good. So there'll be bigger guys on the outside. He'll compliment those guys. Had a good spring, not a great spring. But but in time, still just a freshman.
Okay. So, Com, can you stay on for a few more minutes with us?
Sure.
Okay. 43 minutes after the hour of 1 o'clock. Stay tuned for more sports talk after this short break right here on AM 870 WKAR.
In the week ahead on Talk of the Nation, why so few students who go to college graduate. On Tuesday, a new poll shows broad support for payments for organ donors. As Iran sits down at the negotiating table, what's the goal for the U.S.? Plus, cancellations, renewals, upfronts, and dwindling audiences, the business of television. I'm Yul Conan. That and much more in the coming week on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
And that's Talk of the Nation coming up today at 3 o'clock right here on AM 870 WKAR.
For the rest of this afternoon, we can expect mostly cloudy skies. There is a chance of showers in the forecast, a high in the low 70s. Then some clearing, becoming partly cloudy tonight, a low in the mid-40s. Mostly sunny for Tuesday, a high around 70, and sunny again for Wednesday, a bit warmer, with a high in the upper 70s.
And give us a call. Our lines are open at 355-9527 or toll-free 877-9527-870. Talking with SpartanMag.com's Jim Comperoni. We're talking football. We're going to talk, change that, talk a little bit of basketball as well with Jim. Jim, I wanted to ask you one more question about the recruiting. Do you think with Michigan State and all the schools now are recruiting earlier and trying to get on the juniors, do you think that's going to help? Because, Michigan State's always had the reputation with Mark D'Antonio and his staff of being great evaluators. Will that help them in their junior recruiting ability, how they've been evaluating talent so far?
Well, I think they are very good at that, especially with defensive backs. It'll help them for the program, certainly. Whether or not that helps them in the rankings, maybe not yet. I'm not sure the people that evaluate and do the rankings are as impressed by a Michigan State offer yet as they should be. Some recruiting analysts say they don't look at the offers. I think they should. I mean, if I'm evaluating Damian Terry and I don't have him with any stars and I see Michigan State offers, I'm going to go back and look at film. And if I don't see what they like, I'm going to defer to the coaches of a program that have won a couple of Big Ten titles. So I think with some analysts that might be the case. But, you know, Michigan State, they don't really care. They're going to do their thing, and if people like it, they don't care.
Okay. Well, in basketball, I was over there the other day and saw Denzel Valentine working out, and I think he's going to fit in very well, Comp. I mean, he was working very well with the guys that were there, that were still here during the summer. I think that's going to be a good fit. The other guys haven't got here yet, but I can tell you, he looked real good playing with the guys.
Yeah, you know, he's a team player. He's a champion. Unselfish, loves to make a pass. Everybody in town
yes.
has watched him for a couple of years, and you don't see a whole lot of that. You know, guys that love to make the pass first, especially in his, you know, athletic package, kind of being a point forward.
Yep.
So, yeah, it's going to be real interesting to see how Michigan State decides to use him. They certainly had a lot of success with Draymond Green as a passer mm-hmm. from different angles of the court. And, and Denzel is going to come around as a shooter. He's going to be a better defensive player than people realize. And like I said, he's a champion. There's a chance he could be sharing the ball with guys like Gary Harris, maybe even Jabari Parker for 1 year and a couple of years. I think he's got a good relationship with Costello, who's coming in. Then you have Adrian Payne, who's just going to be coming into his own in his last couple of years. So, man, I think Valentine was a nice recruit for them.
Yeah, I think so too. He it seems like he's really going to fit in well with this group of the class that he's gotten in.
Was Nix on the court?
Yes, he was. Nix was playing pretty well too.
How's he looking physically?
He looks like he's put on a few pounds.
Wow, that kind of surprises me. I thought after the trouble he got into, I thought that would really spark complete dedication and, you know, Rocky Balboa type of intensity and focus. I'm a little surprised if he may have put on a couple pounds.
Yeah, it wasn't a lot, but it did look like he had put on a couple of pounds, and I'm quite sure they'll be coming off of him soon. while he wasn't working out, but yeah, he's got a few pounds on there.
Okay.
Well, okay. Hey, Comp, what more? Let's this basketball team now, you know, because Nix was supposedly the only senior leader on the team. Who do you think fills that leadership void now?
For football?
For basketball. Who do you think fills that leadership void?
I don't think they've got one, Earl. You know, they'll name a couple of guys captain, and they'll try to bring someone around in that area.
Yeah.
You know, Keith Appling would be the guy as a junior, as a point guard, that would be the next man up in that area. And he's a good player. But he's just kind of a quiet guy. You
right,
know?
That's right. He is.
I mean, even when he was scoring 49 points in a state title game, he was a quiet guy. Mm-hmm. So they're working with him, trying to bring out some leadership in him. They thought Nix was the guy, because Nix is a guy who's got a real high basketball IQ. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid to tell people what he thinks of them. That's good.
Yeah.
You mix those two together, there's a leader in there. And that's right when he got in trouble. You know, right when they'd had a couple meetings and they're getting ready to pass it up to Derrick Nix and say, you can do this, young man. And that was his response, which kind of says something about Derrick a little bit also. So to go back to him to ask him to be a leader, harder to do now. And he may eventually lead a little bit in a lot of ways, just naturally because it's in him. But right now it's hard to get that out of him. But I'll remind you, one of the best leaders of the Saban era was Ike Reese.
Yeah, that's right.
And he got in trouble once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
So just because you get in trouble doesn't mean you can't be a leader.
Right.
But it's hard to, if your coach is to really trust and lean on a guy. So I don't think Nix is, you know, ability to be a leader is totally closed on him. I mean, Scott Skiles is a pretty good leader in some ways. He got in trouble a bunch of times.
Yeah.
But you know, with Nix, you know, it's you know, he kind of – I'll tell you this. It kind of surprised him. I mean, it kind of surprised the coaches, as you know, how he grew as somewhat of a leader the last couple of years. You know, like Izzo told us, you know, we never really expected that out of Nix because a year ago he was wanting to transfer,
mm-hmm.
you know, and putting on all kinds of weight. So Nix kind of changes every 3 months. So that's, although they know he's got leadership ability in him and a lot of good intelligence within him, it's hard for coaches to pin that tag on him because you don't know what he's going to be 4 months from now. There's a ton of potential that he could be everything, but you just don't know.
Okay. Got one more question for you, then we'll let you go. We got Todd on the line. Todd, how you doing?
Good afternoon, Earl. Good afternoon, Jim. Jumping in late to the game, so I'd like to switch it back a little bit to football, if I may. First of all, Jim, what do you think we can expect from Chris Norman? Obviously a talented, very talented player who battled injuries coming into his senior season. Obviously there's a lot of talent on that defense, so it makes it difficult maybe for an individual to stand out, you know, I guess with the exception of maybe Bolton. But is this a kid that maybe has a chance to be an all-Big Ten performer if he can stay healthy? What should our expectations be to be a captain and be an all-Big Ten performer? And then obviously, in the special teams, to lose a player like Keyshawn Martin, who did so much, I mean, seemed like at least one game a season that you could point to that he maybe won or flipped for us with special teams. If you had to say right now, who would you think would be the key guy to be the punt returner? And is that a role that a guy like DeAnthony Arnett could step into? I mean, is he – I know you've said you kind of envision more of an inline guy, not necessarily a guy out on the perimeter. But do you think that he has the capability? Who as a Spartan fan should I really want to win that punt returning job? Thanks a lot.
Great questions. You know, Chris Norman, I still don't think we've seen the absolute best out of him. And I think he packs a bunch of ability. Last year, you know, 2 years ago, he got hurt in the bowl game against Alabama, missed the spring. They thought missing the spring kind of hurt him a little bit. And then he re-injured the arm a little bit. He said it hurt him all season. And it really, he really re-injured it in the Rocket game against Wisconsin and missed the Nebraska game and kind of played really hurt the rest of the year. I mean, a linebacker without an arm, he still had the wheels, but he can't really unload like he normally would. And he can unload. We have seen him play at a high level the last 2 years against Michigan. He really brought it in those games. I think there's a high end of potential still for a senior that started. This will be his third year as a starter. I do not think we've seen the best out of him. And he missed the spring, kind of protecting that arm a little bit again this year. Did some drills, some running non-contact drills the last week or so. But in speaking with him just before the green-white game, he was talking about his injuries from last year. And I really didn't realize how hurt he was playing last year. In the meantime, other guys have risen up and become stars around him, like the caller mentioned. And now you're getting into a situation where he's an outside linebacker, and he'll be playing, you know, outside of William Golston, who's going to cause a lot of trouble. Or you flip him to the other side, he'll play outside of Marcus Rush, who continues to get better. Those are excellent defensive ends. Danikos Allen has taken that opportunity and run with it. He was one of the more productive linebackers in the Big Ten last year, second team all Big Ten, one of the top in the Big Ten in tackles for loss. And Danikos Allen is just going to get better this year as a junior. But Chris Norman is a guy, for all the returning starters they have, for a third-year guy, you might not think he still has potential to still come around, but he does. And if he stays healthy as a senior, it's his contract year, I think there's a chance Chris Norman could have a real big, loud year. I'm not sure in the past he's had the natural linebacking knack like Greg Jones had, like Danikos Allen had, but he's in the film room. He's a good kid. He's a smart kid. He can learn some of that stuff. You can't learn knack, though. But physically, I love the guy. And I think he's going to take a step toward being a star this year and joining some of those other guys that have gotten all Big Ten mentioned. And I think he's going to knock them dead when he gets on the field running cones for NFL scouts, too, and doing that 39-inch vertical that he has. Punt return, I don't know, man. You know, Nick Hill did it a little bit last year. He's okay at it, but he's not Keyshawn Martin. You know, Benny Fowler, pretty good kickoff return guy. He's had trouble with injuries. Do you put that guy out there as a return man, knowing that you need him as an upper-class receiver? I don't know. I think Jeremy Langford might be a guy that, you know, from Keyshawn Martin's high school. He's got good speed, almost as much as Keyshawn Martin, and former running back, so he's got a little bit of physicality back there. Johnny Adams is a guy that could do it and do it real well. But, again, I don't know if you want to put a DB back there. Now, a few great ones in college football history have done it and done it well. When you think about, you know, Deion Sanders and, you know, the Honey Badger and people like that, DBs translate real well to punt returners. Plus, you don't have to do a lot of wholesale substitution. You just move the DB back there, keep him on the field. I think Johnny Adams could do it. But, again, do you want to, you know, risk his limbs a little bit? I don't know. Maybe you do. Maybe he's a game-breaking guy that wants to do it. But De'Anthony Arnett, he's got some quickness of foot. I've never seen him return a punt, but I bet he could do it. So I don't know. They've got to find one, though. I might lean toward thinking it might be Langford, but I don't really know right now. And frankly, I've not asked about that enough. And I'll take that as a personal failure on my part that I haven't gotten a little information on that.
Well, they haven't done a lot of that. As we know, in the spring, they didn't do a lot of seeing kick. We'll find out a lot of that in the fall, comp. But, you know, spring, they didn't do a lot of that this past spring, in all honesty.
Yeah, it's not something that you practice at full speed a whole lot.
Mm-hmm. Hey, comp, it's always a pleasure talking with you, my friend. I'm glad you could stay a few extra minutes. And, hey, we'll talk to you again, especially when they get to training camp, and we'll look at the training camp scenarios when they finally break camp.
Sounds real good. Everybody check out SpartanMag.com. We'll have coverage throughout the summer, you know, breaking down the roster and keeping an eye on recruiting. Thanks a lot, Earl.
Okay, thank you, Jim. And that's right. Check out SpartanMag.com right here on AM 870. That's Jim Comperoni, SpartanMag.com. Great publication. So you should get it, check out, find out more about Spartan football and then also Spartan basketball. You can find out both of them through SpartanMag.com. And, hey, I want to thank Aaron for Aaron, you caught me off balance today. You caught me off guard today. I was looking for our guest, and you had already taken it from me. So you were a step ahead of me. That's what you have to do in this business. Stay a step ahead.
That's right. I knew we had some good guests on today. I didn't want to make them wait, so I was ready to go.
And that's good. Yeah, we had two good ones on, Rico Beard and Jim Comperoni, and it's always good talking with Rico and Jim. You know, I love talking to guys who know a lot. Both those guys know a ton, and that's what we like to do here, talk to guys that can give you information and give you some good information. So hopefully you liked what you heard from those two guys today. Hey, Jim, you know, the Diamond Classic starts tonight, and if you want to go over with me, I'm going over to that first game tonight at the Diamond Classic over at Cooley Law School Stadium. And the first game tonight is between that's Lansing Catholic. No, not Lansing Catholic. Tonight is East Haslett and Eaton Rapids tonight. That's the first game tonight. Haslett in Eaton Rapids. So if you want to get over to watch some baseball tonight, see it at Olds Park. It's going to give you a chance to see some great baseball. Haslett and Eaton Rapids in the first game. Okemos and Williamston in the second game. Tomorrow night, East Bath, Lansing Catholic at 5:30. East Lansing and Charlotte at 7:30. That's tomorrow night. So the games tonight, though, Haslett, Eaton Rapids, Okemos and Williamston. Two very good games tonight. If you get over to the 51st Capital Diamond Classic, that's taking place tonight. That starts at 5:30. I know you're going to go over here, Aaron, going over there with me, Aaron, watching a little bit of baseball, a little bit of high school baseball tonight.
that would be fun. Now is that an all-week event?
It's going to be it'll play over the next couple of weeks. It'll be played.
Oh, next couple of weeks. Okay. Yep. Well, yep. That should be interesting then, that's for sure. Hopefully it doesn't get rained out tonight.
Yeah, hopefully it doesn't. That's for sure, because the weather forecast, and it could be rain, but we don't know yet. Hey, we want to thank everyone for calling today and everyone for participating, and thank you. And come back and join us tomorrow right here on AM 870. You're listening to Michigan State University Radio, AM 870 WKAR East Lansing. We come your way Monday through Friday from 1:05 to 2 o'clock right here on WKAR. If you've never called us before, we invite you to become a first-time caller. Join us in the afternoons. Call us up, talk sports with us right here on AM 870. So come back and join us tomorrow. We'll have more great guests for you right here on AM 870 WKAR. Have yourself a very safe and a pleasant evening.
Thanks for listening to Sports Talk with Earl Robinson from AM 870 WKAR.